With increasing commodity prices, higher price volatility, and rising input costs, America's farmers and ranchers are relying on crop insurance more now than ever before to provide individualized protection and to secure operating loans. Protecting 256 million acres of farmland and 350 commodities across the U.S., crop insurance is the primary safety net for many farmers, enabling them to supply our country with food and fiber year after year. Crop insurance, providing peace of mind now and for the next generation of agriculture. And now, AgriPulse Open Mic.
Chairman Lucas, welcome back to AgriPulse Open Mic.
It's a pleasure once again to be with you, Stuart.
Quite a bit has happened here in the past couple of weeks that potentially could impact the writing of a new farm bill, the policy, how much funding is available. First, Congressional Budget Office March baseline projection, which gave a little bit more money in some areas of the farm bill. Then, of course, the proposal by House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan, the fiscal 2013 budget proposal looking out over 10 years, proposes to cut a little about $30 billion out of the farm safety net over a decade and $180 out of the bill as a whole. These two events taken together, are you more optimistic now than you were a month ago that you can get a farm bill enacted this year?
Well, it might be hard to believe, Stuart, but actually in some ways I'm more optimistic than I was a month ago. And why do I say that? Actually, as I understand Mr. Ryan's budget proposal coming out of the Budget Committee, I think he gives me the flexibility, gives the committee the flexibility to do what we need. Now, certainly, we have two components of this budget resolution. One, not only the proposed spending levels over the course of this next farm bill and even the next decade, but there's also another component in there that folks really haven't focused on yet, and that's budget reconciliation, where it appears we'll be required to cut approximately $33 billion out of programs that are in their present spending level. Now, budget reconciliation to become law, to actually take effect, requires not only the House to do a reconciliation bill, but the United States Senate to do a reconciliation bill. And it at least appears to me at this point that budget reconciliation is much like the overall budget process. The Senate will not do either. Therefore, we in the House are going through this process where we'll have to achieve under budget reconciliation $33 billion in a committee markup. We basically have a month, Stuart, in which to fulfill our obligations, as do the other committees that are subject to reconciliation. And by the way, under the rules, as I understand they're being constructed, if we don't take action on the committee, then the budget committee will come in and make those reconciliation decisions for us. That's the most unacceptable option of all. And it's not just ag. There's five other committees approximately that have to go through this process. But the positive part is we have the flexibility in how to make the decisions, and this is all coming together. We'll, I think, see fairly soon, I hope, where we go from here.
Will this reconciliation process that this committee goes through sort of give folks a pretty good template for how the farm bill markup will go?
I don't think so, Stuart, and why do I say that? It appears that the suggestion from the Budget Committee is that essentially most, if not all, of the $33 billion come out of the nutrition programs. My friends on the minority side in the House Agriculture Committee, many of them will not be impressed by that. I understand that. Many of my friends in the Senate won't be impressed by that either. But it's a process we're going to have to go through, and once this is done and we begin again to focus on the long-term farm bill, the question is, will we still have the polite phrase I think to use up here is comedy on the committee. Will we still have that ability to work together across aisle and across region? That's what I'm trying to accomplish over the course of the next few weeks, is to do what the committee is obligated to do, and then do it in a way that gives the committee the maximum amount of flexibility when we put the real farm bill together, and do it in a way that maintains that, what do you want to call it, bipartisan tradition, or that comedy that we enjoy, unlike most other committees, to maintain that. So, yeah, I've got a little lifting to do here, but I've got some good friends to work with on the committee on both sides of the aisle.
Sounds like the reconciliation process is all sort of a necessary evil you've got to go through, and hopefully people don't fracture too much in that process.
That's exactly the way to look at it. Now, some will say, if the Senate's not going to do reconciliation, why do you go through this process? Well, I think the goal here is to demonstrate that savings can be achieved so that ultimately this fall, when the real appropriations process is concluded, whether it's a year-long CR or one or 12 of the appropriation bills, whatever the final process is, to demonstrate that some of the things that are called for in budget sequestration, the agreement last year to make cuts in a variety of areas, don't necessarily have to be implemented that way. So we'll be giving the appropriations process flexibility, and once again we'll be demonstrating to the leadership and the majority conference that the Ag Committee is willing to do its part in addressing the national financial mess. And by the same token, as I have said and continue to say to my colleagues here, by the same token, let the Ag Committee do its work when it comes to farm policy.
In the budget document itself, there are a couple of suggestions there, ways that savings could be achieved in the safety net area. Reduction in direct payments, doesn't say outright elimination, and reducing the premium subsidies for crop insurance. Did you thank Chairman Ryan for those suggestions?
I have had a series of ongoing conversations with Chairman Ryan now for several years. I thank him for all his good ideas, but I think the key phrase is they're suggestions.
So where do you go from here? You say you've got to deal with the reconciliation thing pretty quick. So are you on two tracks here? You've got to get ready for reconciliation, but at the same time, you've got to have a plan ready to go forward with the actual markup of a new farm bill.
Stuart, as you and I speak, we still on the Ag Committee have field hearings to do. We'll probably have 2 weeks of hearings then here in D.C., finishing up some issues. And at that point, then we'll have done our work in that regard. Once reconciliation is over with, then at that point, we look at the lay of the land and we see where we go. But once again, as you and I sit here together, I would note for the record, as difficult as passing a highway bill has been, we're going to play this one as we work our way through. The Senate is still procedurally a step ahead of us, and I welcome Chairwoman Stabenow and Ranking Member Roberts when they decide to move forward with the markup to proceed. But I've got a slightly different set of circumstances, and I've got to play this situation as carefully as I possibly can, because ultimately, whether it is through the regular process and a conference committee that ultimately puts a farm bill together, or it's in a lame duck session after Election Day, or it's an extension of what we have, or some combination thereof, or all of them combined, ultimately, we have to have a five-year farm bill.
Last fall, you, Chairman Stabenow, Ranking Members Peterson and Roberts all talked about the need for balance in that farm policy package you put together for the failed super committee. Balance across titles in terms of savings. You still feel that way as you go into the regular order farm bill process?
Yes, I do. And a farm bill still has to have farming in it. And a farm bill still has to treat regions and all commodity groups in a fair and equitable fashion.
Because that implies that nutrition won't get away with a $4 billion cut in a regular order process.
In a regular order process, it'll have to be a balanced bill. Bear in mind, I have to work with my committee to achieve an acceptable bill to the House Agriculture Committee. Then we have to take that bill to the floor and achieve something that a majority of our colleagues will vote for. Our friends in the Senate will do their work. We'll go to conference committee. We then have to achieve something that can be agreed to in conference, ultimately then accepted by majorities of both the House and the Senate, and signed by the President. This is a process. This is almost an odyssey, an adventure we're on here. But the great journey is underway, and we're going to get to the other side. But there's nothing simple about it.
You're finishing up your field hearing schedule. What have you heard from producers out in the country? Any common themes?
I think our friends in the Northeast, which was a heavy focus on dairy, a heavy focus on fruits and vegetables, clearly they all agreed emphatically, leave us alone and let us farm. But when it comes to regulatory issues, I think you'd hear the same comments in Oklahoma or Minnesota or anywhere else, but very firm and very straightforward. In Illinois, we had representatives of not only corn and beans, but all of the other industries, the production agriculture factors in the Midwest, and I was surprised by how focused they were on crop insurance. And once again, a willingness from some of the livestock groups there to acknowledge we have to have more feed grains. If we're going to put 45% or 50% of our feed grains through the ethanol cookers, we've got to have more livestock feed for the livestock industry and for human consumption. And they understood that.
House Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas, Mr. Chairman, as always, thank you so much for the time.
And I suspect we'll visit many more times before this great journey's over.
With increasing commodity prices, higher price volatility, and rising input costs, America's farmers and ranchers are relying on crop insurance more now than ever before to provide individualized protection and to secure operating loans. Protecting 256 million acres of farmland and 350 commodities across the U.S., crop insurance is the primary safety net for many farmers, enabling them to supply our country with food and fiber year after year. Crop insurance, providing peace of mind now and for the next generation of agriculture.